sacrifice of act we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Sharanam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Dharmam Sharanam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Sangham Sharanam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha niroda, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha niroda, gamini patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajna paramita hridayaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness, and emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy blessed day, O happy blessed place, O happy blessed time, O happy blessed path, O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here, in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutiyampi tatiyampi sabaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self in another, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. We are here to end suffering. If any suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
Just a reminder for those people who are here for the first time, we do record Sunday morning groups, so we can share them with the rest of the Sangha who are monthly donors. So what shall we look at today? So you've been looking at or noticing the what happens between lost in thought and coming back here. Okay?
It's very, very fast.
It's very fast, uh-huh.
And the thing that prompted me to begin looking at that place to begin with is number one, it got to the point where I didn't want to come back to the present because the beating was so severe for having wandered off.
Uh-huh.
So, and someone, probably Sherry, said, just sit in gratitude that you're back.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The projection was that there was someone who did not want to come back because of the beating, and there was a suggestion.
It was an identification. This is not worth it.
It's not worth it.
Yeah, this,
uh-huh.
This is too painful. No matter what I do, I can't keep from, I can't stay absolutely focused in the present moment all the time. And so, I just think I'll quit altogether. So I've been for years looking at that place, and it's morphed.
Did you say it's morphed?
Morphed.
Uh-huh.
For a long time, it was just torture. Just what is wrong with you that you can't stay focused, that you wander off and get lost in such ridiculous stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of morphed into something a little less virulent. And then it kind of got subtle. It sort of went underground and stopped being actually verbal.
Uh-huh.
It was just a sinking feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's still judgment. It's still, you've done it wrong yet again.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was, so I've noticed that. And what I've just begun to notice is that it's gone more analytical. There's no gratitude. There's no gratitude for just having come back. It's now something that doesn't actually make me, it's not, it says it's not really designed to make me feel bad for having wandered off. It's just more of a kind of analysis
uh-huh.
of how this person is and where adjustments might need to be. So, so it's been an interesting place of practice.
So let me make sure that I get on the same page. So you've been watching the process between wandering off and coming back, and there was a story, I would say, that that one of the reasons for not coming back is so that you weren't tortured by the beating.
Yeah.
And there was a suggestion to look at it with just simply gratitude because you're back. And in that process of just looking at it, it's morphed from torture to judge to something very subtle.
It's been a number.
And then now it's just simply analytical. It's like, how is that happening?
Yeah, just something along those lines. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's still there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I very rarely am present to a simple returning. You know, there is always something wrong with having
wandered off.
Mm-hmm. Subtly wrong, grossly wrong. It's wrong.
Uh-huh.
Fortunately, along with this, through the years, there's not taking it personally. It just seems to have it's just a little wheel that stands somewhere, and that's just what it is.
Uh-huh. So it's a wheel that spins somewhere, and I'm just curious, June. So there's the process of wandering off and then coming back and then feeling bad. And is there feeling bad for feeling bad?
Yeah, once it occurs to me that there I am again doing that.
Uh-huh.
You know, it just, you know, it's like first, yeah.
Yeah. And so is there some way that you're practicing differently with it or just looking at it still?
Well, as I say, it's there's an awareness that it just does that. It's not me.
It's not you.
It's not me. It doesn't know gratitude.
It doesn't know gratitude.
It can't know gratitude.
Can't know gratitude.
So if there's nobody here taking it personally, any of it, there can be gratitude. Now there can just be, it simplifies that whole process.
Mm-hmm.
Takes
the suffering out of it. So what dropped in when you were talking about it is that there's a process of, there's a standard of how presence has to look.
Oh, that's...
And the process of presence has to look. And I think, I don't know this, but if there's an awareness of this is how it is as a process which is very, very universal and happens to everybody, then there's a level of acceptance which kind of morphs the relationship to it, right? That is,
yes.
There's a someone who had an expectation of how they must be in order to be practicing presence.
Yeah.
And what we're noticing is that there is no way to effort ourselves into presence. We just have to drop into it.
Mm-hmm.
So once we accept that the process is that way, then the person who's trying to meet the standard also starts to drop away, and then it just simply is what it is, and I come to or I'm not here. I'm either here or I'm not here. It's just a bitmap, binary, 1, 2.
Yeah.
And then you can just stay with it, and it loses its charge. And somehow, I would project that in losing its charge, you actually are being more present than than distracted.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there's no identification once you come back. That person's not there, that someone's not being created.
Yeah.
And everything in compassionate acceptance transforms, right?
And a huge part of the process was noticing what has been, discovering those standards that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
How they're held, where they're held,
mm-hmm.
The nature of those standards, that they're being held, that there is an I here who has them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before practice, I didn't know any of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just too much. That's just me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so just a gradual unfolding of awareness of how this conditioned mind is set up.
Mm-hmm. And the biggest awareness, it sounds like, is that it's not you, and not taking it personally allows for it to be whatever it is,
yeah,
without the suffering. Penny.
I can jump on that. One thing I realized is that the hardest thing for the conditioned being to do is to get it that all that I need to do is come back.
Uh-huh. So the hardest thing for the conditioned being to do is to just realize
it can just come back. Because somebody then wants to jump in and say, well, then why were you gone? How did that happen? Even aside from a beating, someone says, well, you know, it's sort of like, well, there's something to be learned here.
Uh-huh.
So you need to kind of go back and reconstruct what happened so that this
doesn't happen again.
And it's you know, it's one of those things that's way too simple for conditioning to just get it that all I need to do is come back.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing needs to happen except
mm-hmm.
to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that is just off the charts as far as conditioning is concerned.
Uh-huh. Well, and what dropped in when you said that is because in the conditioned world, it seems like agency is the most important thing.
Well, and my attention is the most important.
And your attention is most important. And the drive or efforting maintains conditioning,
yes,
in some senses.
Yes, and my attention maintains conditioning. So I come back, and if I can get into, if conditioning can get me into a conversation about why I was gone,
uh-huh,
or anything,
uh-huh,
then I'm not back.
Yeah.
And then
uh-huh.
I'm just captured again.
Uh-huh.
But it just seems way too, I mean, it's really one of those things, it just seems way too simple. You know, I'm not paying enough of a price.
Uh-huh.
There's that too. You have to earn your way into whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But to just drop it and come back, oh.
Yeah, letting go doesn't seem to be...
It just seems too simple.
It's too simple.
It doesn't require anything.
It doesn't require anything.
So uh-huh. It's not achieved, it's not earned,
accomplished,
it's not accomplished.
Deserved.
Yes, exactly, yeah. Mm. I was thinking, you know, one of the things that has been very helpful to me is years ago when we had to take our dog to dog training because we got her at the pound and we had to take her to dog training and the trainer said, as we were all trying to train these animals, no matter how long it takes you to get the dog to come to you, it should always be a good experience for the dog to come to you.
Uh-huh.
You could be wanting to kill it,
uh-huh,
but, you know, when it comes to you, and you just have to welcome it with open arms.
Uh-huh.
Because otherwise there's nothing in it for it to come to you.
Uh-huh.
That was such a helpful piece of advice, you know?
Yes.
So I often have applied that. It's like, all I need to do is come here. I don't need to have any conversation about what a bad dog I was. I just need to come, and that's all there is to it. And, you know, and practicing that with an animal, it works.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and it seems that practicing it with ourselves, it works,
it
too.
It works, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you. Cameron.
Well, this is interesting because I've been looking at this similar thing since last Sunday. Someone shared a process that really lit up a process for me that I was not clear about, not conscious about. Mm-hmm. And that is that whole thing about there being standards for meditation and what it looks like. And it was about feeling like there's a requirement to just be focused so pinpointedly on the breath or whatever it is. And that it's possible to have a much larger field of awareness, is actually what it is, but the attention can be on something with the awareness expanded.
Uh-huh.
And I've been practicing with that since last Sunday. And it's made such a difference, because what I saw in practicing with it is that feeling like that was a requirement to be so focused, and of course not to be able to do it,
uh-huh.
gave conditioning all the ammunition it needed to tell me how I wasn't doing meditation right. I was, and all of that, and trying so hard and then getting told afterwards I did a lousy job, mm-hmm. was not making that exactly something that I looked forward to, that whole experience. And the other thing is, I never could really quite understand, because of that, really thinking that was what the focus had to be so narrow, I was never really able to apply the mind of meditation to going around in the world.
Uh-huh.
Because that seemed to require a lot bigger, you know, or else,
yes.
you know,
uh-huh.
I would be just too focused to notice that, you know, the train's coming or mm-hmm. whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I've been applying that to going around in the world too, that I can be aware of my breath and even count it, or aware of something else that I need to pay attention to for some reason, but also to be aware of other things, and for that all to be part of being present.
Uh-huh. So let me catch up with you. So the process that you were practicing with, mm-hmm. is the awareness, that attention doesn't necessarily have to be narrowly focused. It could be on expanded awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And the process that dropped in, that I think conditioning has us in, is it sets up the standard that is impossible, makes us believe 100% that that is what it means, so that we never look at it or examine it. And then we can't achieve the standard, and then we get beaten up for it. So that was happening in the process of meditation as well. But this ability to just inquire and examine whether the first assumption was true or not,
yeah.
allowed for a different experience, which actually, practiced, could take the mind of meditation everywhere.
Right, uh-huh. right. And it's helping me with the first assignment in the email class, too.
Uh-huh.
It's been really exciting, because I've been meditating for a long time. and
it has controlled the definition of presence.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And particularly in sitting meditation, you know, how that is supposed to go and how it's supposed to look, and it just feels like, you know, there's just been this huge weight lifted off, and there's the ability to actually relax and enjoy it.
Relax and enjoy it.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a big wow.
It's a big wow.
Yeah. And I also think it is just so exciting that it happens so frequently, coming to group, mm-hmm. and people share, and as they share, you know, they're sharing an insight or an awareness, and that it's possible to actually follow along and actually get that same, have that same insight.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And it, you know, it's like it's kind of the proof or the experience of how it takes everyone.
Uh-huh, it's the proof. Well, so if I'm on the same page, that it's possible to arrive in a place like Sangha, mm-hmm. and have someone have an insight, and then sort of participate in the insight as a way to receive information.
Yeah.
And the proof that really, how did you put it? The proof that it we're all
that it takes us all.
It takes us all.
That's the Bodhidharma and Sangha. The one of the three important things is Sangha, and when I am able to be present and to follow along in my own experience with someone else sharing something that they've mm-hmm. seen, I can go right along and I can actually see that too. Uh-huh. And maybe something that I hadn't been aware of seeing on my own, the way that somebody structures it so that it drops into a place of understanding for me, mm-hmm. actually takes me to that same mm-hmm.
place.
Mm-hmm. I just think that's just such a gift.
Yeah, and actually it points to what the class is about, right? Because if everything is the Buddha,
yes.
we're all of the same suchness,
yes.
then suchness resonates with suchness,
yes.
and suchness is transformed, and that intelligence can be present everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's just a recognition.
Yes, that's the word that really gets me, because that's like the first time I ever heard Sherry speak. She spoke about things that I would not have really had a way to understand, but I recognized it.
It's a resonance.
It's mm-hmm. a recognition of something already known, but not known here.
Here.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so that's, yeah.
And it's my experience that, you know, when we receive that intelligence from some other form of suchness that mm-hmm. isn't right here, mm-hmm. it's almost as if this channel is not open. Mm-hmm. Yet, and mm-hmm. so there's a way by which it comes in from the other way,
yes.
and then the channel becomes open and lands.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. It's, yes. Isn't that beautiful?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah.
Life has to get to you somehow.
It does. Yeah. Sometimes it doesn't even use people. It uses
yeah.
trees and
uh-huh.
birds and dogs and cats and mm-hmm. anything it can use.
And all we have to do is be present and
be
sort
there.
Of come back to what you started out with. So important to realize that if it starts to control the very process by which you're available,
whew. Sunk, huh?
Uh-huh.
So from the beginning.
Wonderful that the process uh-huh. that allowed you to recognize it was also the same process we're talking about.
Yeah.
And that it got to you, the information that you needed to alter the way
yeah.
presence is.
It came
is
through love.
It came through love.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. Wow, indeed.
Yes.
It's a quiet. This isn't.
So, presence. I had an experience this morning of walking up to the building, and I was doing 50 things that were not where I was at the time I was walking. You know, it's like I was at the building and I was already doing a number of tasks that
uh-huh.
were not happening right in front of me at that moment. And
it's so strange to think that if we did it here, we're going to have some hope of doing
exactly.
it when we get there.
Somehow it's going to speed the process up
yes.
if I've done it, you know, uh-huh. over and over and over before I finally uh-huh. get to it. It's just insane. And this is what I'm curious about. It dropped in that I was doing that.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So you just became aware that there
I
was a process
that
of
I was doing that,
and strategizing and planning going on.
And there was another possibility.
That was another possibility.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
There was a possibility of enjoying that early morning dawn before the sun really came up and the sky was incredibly beautiful.
Uh-huh.
And it just, it was just night and dawn.
My doctor would like to.
It was just night
that?
And dawn. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Just dawned on me. And I looked up, and at that moment, a shooting star just
oh,
passed right over. And, you know, of course, it made a little bit of meaning out of that. It was like, oh my God, that's my gift from life to just. And but you know what I saw about that is that it's God. It's always given us gifts. That I,
yes.
You know, and it's not personal. But you know, to every moment that I come back, there's like a gift there for me to receive.
sort of a really gentle teaching that if there was that attention on all of the things that were being planned, that shooting star wouldn't be there. And that whole experience of realizing that we're constantly being given gifts, right, there wouldn't have been a presence to.
And yeah, and what was there immediately was joy. Mm-hmm. The joy that we were speaking mm-hmm. about yesterday. Mm-hmm. It was just like, oh my God. You know, it was just, it was, yeah, it was just a 360-degree turn, you know. From mm-hmm. And so my experience is that, I'm just curious about what it was at that moment that brought that information to me. Mm-hmm. Because I've, you know, every time I come back and I go, that's it, never leave it again. I got this licked. You know, mm-hmm. I know it's where to live. It's where, you know, and then it just doesn't seem to be the thing that makes it a permanent state. Mm-hmm. You know, just that kind of wanting, just that desire. I don't know what to say. Well, I know certainly beating allowing the beatings to occur about. Mm-hmm.
Missing out
doesn't support it. Mm-hmm. Making a plan, you know, mm-hmm. doesn't support it.
Well, I think it's something what Penny said, that it's really, it's something that if we think of conditioned mind as a process outside of life, mm-hmm. then nothing in life is actually, I think we were talking about this too, that nothing in life is permanent or fixed. So the nature of that process of coming back is letting go. Mm. And so to engage the very process that does not know how to do that, in attempting to find out how to keep a moment when a mm-hmm. moment could never be kept. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that the only process by which we can get to that moment is by letting go the process that wants to hold it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. somebody's trying real hard to
because there is that desire and that willingness to want to have that experience of being in the moment, uh-huh. mm-hmm. but because that's that which is seeking,
yeah.
But that which is seeking, when taken over by that conditioned process, the seeking process is not the holding process, holding on to process.
Okay.
Right. And just to be in that awareness that it depends on where the attention is, and if the attention's on a life process, then we're with whatever is arising, shooting stars or pain in the knee.
Yeah, yeah.
But if we're in the other process, we only want the shooting star, and then
right.
there's a constant strategizing of how to get only the shooting star,
yeah.
which is just not what life is about.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even that moment I project into the drive to make it so,
yeah.
and the beatings of why can't I make it so,
mm-hmm.
or even the curiosity of how did that happen so that I can have it
right.
so, which is what Penny was talking about,
yeah.
are all the departures into the very process that you're going to miss the next moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the beauty of the experience, I project, is that there was an awareness of all of that happening, right? The planning process,
mm-hmm.
the dropping of the planning process,
mm-hmm.
the awareness of the shooting star, the gratitude, and then the resurrection of the planning process.
Yeah, yeah.
And that itself is the teaching. So once we understand the nature of it, there's a possibility to just drop it.
I can see now there was the that wanting to hold that experience of the shooting star. Then it's like, yeah, okay, you know, I just want to hang on to that instead of being just dying to that moment and
the next moment being and just as beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And
And that's where that whole process of comparison comes in, right? Because the ego process wants to fix that experience and compare every subsequent experience to that experience, yeah. Which means that we're not in the experience of the moment.
Right. Right.
Because, yeah. If this is the only moment, there's nothing to compare it to, and this moment yeah. is just beautiful.
Mm-hmm. So many times after that, and then later on, it was like I was going back to the sky moment, actually the sky had changed completely, and there was all another gift, you know.
Yes.
And that's great. It's been up for me. The letting go process has been up for me, so that's. Really perfect to realize it.
And it's our nature, right? It's what we are. We do let go.
Yeah.
We're in tune with it. Mm-hmm. What keeps us out of tune with it is the attention on that.
Yeah. Well, that's really great to. Yeah, because I've been really quite caught up in a story that I had forgotten how to let go, or I didn't know how to let go, or, you know, I had terminal.
Total phone and syndrome.
Terminal tightness there. So, yeah.
I mean, this is just another something that might be helpful. But your body was present to the shooting star,
right.
So it was present to the next moment, to the change in the breath, yeah. Right? So if the awareness is expanded, then we are there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 That was the proof. So.
That was the proof.
Yeah.
Thank you. Susan, did you have your hands up?
No, before. Yes.
Yes.
I am wondering about the fact that I have, over the years, been able to now hold an entire conversation while counting to 10. I started this weekend trying to picture the number in front of me so I wouldn't have the conversation. But the time I came here before many years ago was when I learned the 1 to 10 process. And and over the years, I can still count to 10. Entire conversation goes on. So I'm wondering if there's any. I mean, I'm sure everybody else has experienced that.
It's interesting, right? We've had this conversation a couple of times, and what Sherry's often said is actually it's not possible to do.
You think the conversation
to have, yeah, well, in the sense of, it's interesting to watch because attention moves so quickly. You can go from 1 to an entire conversation back to 2 and not notice that the attention is moving that quickly.
So it's just
a possibility to explore that,
just notice like the fastness of the switch.
Perhaps, yeah. Mm-hmm. So we've had that conversation about how people will claim that they can do an entire shopping list while they maintain their attention on the process of counting from 1 to 10, but we can train ourselves to count to 1 and do the shopping list and come back to 2 and do the shopping list.
Got it. And that's what I've become really good at.
Well, and it's interesting to see. It's interesting to see if we could actually do the other thing, which is to count from 1 to 10 without having the conversation as a process of exploration.
That would be cool. Or, you know, is it there as a goal that, yeah, that would be what I'd like.
Yeah. I think it's related to the process we were talking about yesterday, right? It's all an exploration. Because we don't want anything we firmly believe is true is questionable because we don't know where it's coming from.
Wanted to say something about letting go. I had a very similar experience this morning while walking. I had learned a process from a monk 10 years ago about walking meditation. We're taking 5 or 10 steps and stopping, taking in what you smell, what you see, what you hear, all the senses, and was doing that. And, you know, for a while I was walking, nothing's happening.
Uh-huh.
There's just no insights this morning. I'm leaving today. Oh, no! Something has to happen. And so it's like, well, why don't you just be right here and see what happens? Let's just see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And that attitude of let's just see what happens, suddenly the wellspring And, you know, just catching on, you know, I stopped and looked at this tree and thought, oh, this tree is just so beautiful, and was taking it in, and then took another 5 steps and let go of that. And then went, oh, but this next one is so beautiful, and so is this next one, and realized that a way to intercept the conditioned mind from coming in was to immediately let go, to enjoy it, to be there, and let go so you can get to the next moment. Something like you said about the notes. Is that there has to be an immediate letting go. As soon as you're starting to cling and you realize you're in the moment, it's too late. You're already out of the moment. So there, and I immediately watched the leaves letting go. You know, the wind was blowing and the trees were letting go of the leaves, and it was just a perfect metaphor for what needs to happen. As I was watching the tree, how beautiful the leaf was clinging, and then it just let go. And it was absolutely beautiful. And then it brought me to something you said last night that years and years ago I thought I had understood and knew, which was about the ego construct versus the identities. And you had said it to me a couple times, and I was nodding my head, yes, yes. And I kind of knew I didn't really get it. I was hearing it and intellectualizing it, but it was not in the heart. And right after that experience, it just, all of that came together, and I felt it in my heart of, I was taking all of that ego construct as me. Which is why I could not separate it. What was the film over life? That everything was sort of foggy, and I not feeling things the way I know that I can. And it was the ego constructs. I had mistaken identities, and those, I thought those were sort of the childhood identities we discussed, so forth. And what had happened is, instead of addressing those identities, recognizing those voices as just needing compassionate awareness, a couple words of kindness, and to soothe them, the ego constructs had taken over and were replying to them before I identified those as me. Those are my personality. It's my personality. It's just who I am. And I'm a terrible person. After all these years, I've learned nothing.
I hope you didn't believe that.
No.
Okay, good.
But that has been happening.
That has been happening.
A lot less intense than it used to be. 10 years ago when I came here, by the second day I was coming out of my skin. I just wanted to get in the car and go home. It was so painful to see everything, how ugly everything looked, all the, you know, not realizing that there are identities and this and that. And it was so intense and so painful. And now I could just feel like I could be here forever. It's home. And the sense of home is where the heart is, because it's so centered here. And I feel the clinging wanting to come on, that I don't want to drive out the gates. I just want to park it here in my little shack and just be happy.
Well,
it's so beautiful.
It's so interesting, right? Because it's very similar to what Sequoia was talking about, that we get to see the totality of the process that we're going to encounter the moment we leave. And the teaching is in that process, which is, you know, you can look at a leaf and be brought back to that place of letting go is as simple as a leaf dropping. It's not a tree getting up in the morning and going, I have to let this leaf go, and the leaf going, I have to let myself go, or whatever else. And that awareness that the letting go process is part of the life flow, and the attempt to want to hold on, or the attempt to effort to let go, are the movements into the very same process that will prevent it.
And the proof, I mean, sort of the faith in what I realized, you know, by paying so much attention to nature and the cycle was, it's okay, the leaf is going to let go. It's not going to stay bare like that forever.
No.
Spring will come, and the next beautiful moment will arise. And there's really been a lack of faith in that. Like, something I've practiced with my children is sort of a clinging when they're babies. They're just so delicious, and you don't want them to grow up. You want them to be this small, and then I've learned, like, you know, letting go, and well, oh, now that they're 3 or 2, oh, they're still so cute and they're still so beautiful. And so accepting that it's going to change, and yet you think, oh, they're just not going to be as cute when they're 5, or they're not going to be cute when they're 7. And yet it is all so beautiful. And there's a pain of the letting go, that someday they will leave and so forth. And it's all sort of bittersweet. I've been able to practice specifically in that situation, but maybe not so much in my own experience, that are like from my experiences that don't relate to my children, kind of, and it's sort of forgotten how to do that. And so this has been just a beautiful experience to be here.
Well, the two things that you said, I thought I think it would be worth punctuating that one is it's a practice, right? Because it does take practice to drop a conditioned and habitual way of habitual orientation. And the second is something that June said about how the whole process is universal and not personal. Because if you take the self-hate and the identity out of the process, if we look at the process of dissatisfaction, it is a process of trying to make life what it's not. And what life is not is a permanent, fixed thing.
Right.
And so that whole desire to hold on to not let go, to have the same experience because there's a fear that that experience won't be repeated, is actually pointing to some truth, because that experience is not going to be repeated. But in that frozen state, it seems to point to the fact that there's a fear that the process, that what's going to come next can't be as powerful or beautiful as this moment.
Right.
But till we let go, we can't actually know that.
Right. So I had not connected in all these years, what was the missing thing in there? And there's a letting go that has to happen continuously. Always letting go. And I've always known letting go is very difficult for me.
Well, it is very difficult, as we were talking about, for the process of conditioning to let go. It doesn't know how to let go.
Right.
It is not the process of letting go.
Right.
And so it's just it's something that conditioned mind can't get a hold of.
Right.
Which is why we learn to direct the attention, because it's only directing the attention that causes the letting go to happen.
Right. That's why it's been so difficult. The more you're identified, the more the tighter you cling, the less you let go, the less you're living. And the fear is that the next moment won't be as good as this one, so I better hang on as tightly as possible. It's what it is. There's this fear that the next moment won't be this good. How is that going to happen?
Well, and then the practice comment was, we say it in the daily recollection every single morning, right? That it's that constant devotion to the experience that we're practicing that builds the faith. And the faith builds the constant willingness to be devoted to the practice. And that cycle of momentum allows us to have that ability to just relax into trusting the life process.
Right. I had recited it before, and it had never sank in. Just stayed up in my head. And saying that this morning was just, really felt it. How you, it's work to some degree. It takes work. There's an active doing to make those muscles stronger, to make that commitment stronger. It really,
And the koan is the doing without the doing in the place of no I doing.
Right. Just sort of showing up. If you're in this room, and however the meditation goes, whether it's good or bad, it doesn't matter. I came, I sat here, and I have to have some faith that
the magic
just
will
showing
happen.
Up, at least, the magic. There was something in the booklet you guys gave us that maybe today nothing will happen. It's sort of like you just have to have faith that it will come. It will drop in at some point. Maybe not today. If you set up some standards about it's going to happen today or tomorrow, well, it may not happen today or tomorrow. It might take 10 more years. It took me 10 years to get to this point.
But you're here.
But I'm here.
And it's such an exciting exploration ahead.
Yeah.
Thank you. Anna, then Dean.
So there's a couple things I've been looking at that seem related. So one of the things that I just like popped in was this experience I had recently where I was actually in an argument with my husband, and what dropped in was, conditioning wanted to say, see, look how this goes. And instead what came up was like, how do I know this isn't on the pathway to enlightenment? how do I know? And just that spirit of inquiry with everything. And that, what conditioning wants to say is that life should look like this, and if things were going well, it would look that way. And that's all I mean, to go to that place of, I have no idea how this is for my benefit. for me, it's just opening up a lot of possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that orientation that Sherry often encourages us with is that everything is for you.
Right.
We just don't know how.
And, you know, I think trying to figure out how is the world of conditioning. And just that movement to, I think it's like that faith of, you know, each step is a step along the path, on the path.
Uh-huh.
You know, and from there, just looking around to see what's actually going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think project a little bit, what I'm seeing when you say that is that all of the practice that you've been doing mm-hmm. produces the availability in that space of awareness for that other not from conditioning but from life to drop in the awareness that this could be something that you are encountering in order to transcend. You don't know that.
Right.
And in the ability to receive that, it creates the space for it to happen again and again and again.
Yeah.
And that might just be the path of transformation.
Exactly, right? Mm-hmm. And in these sticky places where, you know, it's very easy to say I'm identified, when I move to that place of, I actually don't, what I know is happening is I'm seeing what's going on and I don't know if this is, you know, I just, because what condition will want to do is see it and then go to, you know,
a meaning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it seems, and tell me if this is your experience, that there is a much more, there's a capacity to experience and just simply be with what is instead of engaging the process of interpretation.
Yep. Yeah, right. Because there's I think in that moment where I see what's going on, it's like there in that place is the willingness not to go to the meaning.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if that.
There's a willingness not to go with the meaning, and it feels like there's, you know, movement, sensation, thought, story, behavior.
Yeah.
That if there's enough gaps and the story gets disengaged,
mm-hmm.
there is space for the piece of information to drop in from life
mm-hmm.
instead of being filled in by the story.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's like that coupled with like the faith, this faith part, because
mm-hmm.
Because there's something else solid to turn to besides that. I'm going to say old friend, that conditioned security.
Mm-hmm.
Security, not really security.
Yeah. So there's a lot more trust. In other words, the practice has allowed for a different intimate relationship that is trustworthy, that is accessible.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just been really a very... I feel very grateful for the practice, and in many times the argument with my husband will continue.
Uh-huh.
You know, and just kind of being, but it continues, and there's a non-personal aspect to it. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but what conditioning wants to do with it is again make meaning out of, like, the argument's going on, and make meaning out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a way in which it's, you know, we'll try again tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And This may very well be, this is happening. You know, this is my experience of life, and this is what's happening. And staying in a place of, like, not having an opinion about it.
Mm-hmm. Right. So just being present to whatever it is that's happening.
Yeah.
And so it almost feels like the familiar process is to engage and participate in the content.
Yeah.
And get identified with the content.
Mm-hmm.
But there's much more practice and training to engage within at a process level.
Yeah.
And at a process level, there's no charge because the content is not identified with.
Yeah.
And there's engaging at a process level drops us into a much more place of awareness, noticing what's happening,
right.
than an identification that's taking it personally.
Yeah. That's either taking it to mean something good or bad about me.
There doesn't seem to be a someone there at all.
Exactly. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's just like this is what's going on, and with sitting, I've been looking at that too because, you know, what occurred to me just one day was, you know, it was one of those days where the counting didn't really go past two.
Uh-huh.
And at the end, I was like, and I see what's going on with me. At least I see what's, you know, I see the things that are passing through right now, and that's useful information,
mm-hmm.
Which has been really helpful for me in approaching my sitting practice.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's true that if I just sit there, I will see the things that are coming through. If I sit there, oftentimes, even if I'm not able to count, I am able to be aware of all these things that are cycling through me in my head.
And I project it's the recognition that you're present.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I'm present for this person.
And it's a different experience from not being present and being unable to count.
Yeah.
Versus being present and able to count.
Right.
And not able to count.
And I didn't even know 30 minutes passed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's 30 minutes.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, so it's been helpful. And relatedly, not sure how, but I'm really glad I came this weekend.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And you know, there was like a story about, oh, it's just a weekend. And, week or a month, you know, and just seeing how coming to, like, it's a moment-by-moment practice.
Yes.
You know, and that, it's a moment-by-moment practice.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes, you know, it's just, you never
know when that insight will blow you away.
Exactly. So, you know, any 10 minutes I have to really focus on practice is 10 minutes that I have to, you know, focus on practice, which goes into this story that conditioning always has around standards around practice and doing too much, doing too little, you know, all that. Usually doing too little. That's what it does. And
it sounds like a story also about how much time is required to have an insightful practice experience.
Yeah, for it to really make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But my experience is that every moment that I spent on paying attention
is paying attention.
Yeah. Paying attention and valuable and is supporting me to practice and get to know myself better.
Mm-hmm. So Sherry talked about this in precepts, right? That this we don't recognize this how high the stakes are.
Mm-hmm.
That every moment that we indulge conditioning is a moment we're training. We are training ourselves to be in control of to be controlled by conditioning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So every moment that we're actually not here, then there's a it's got a check mark against mm-hmm. its ledger.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And the more that happens, the less we have an experience of our own lives.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is why it is truly moment by moment, and every moment counts, as you're saying, because a moment that doesn't count counts for it.
Yeah.
And at the end, there's only either ego or the incarnation that survives.
Yeah. It's like maintaining that connection with life, and the pathway getting bigger every
That's
time
right.
I turn
mm-hmm.
towards it.
Mm-hmm. So it doesn't get silted over or covered over, or the calibration starts to get
right,
out of tune, if you will.
Yeah,
in
yeah.
the instrument that we were talking about.
Yeah, and anything to the contrary, any conversation about that is just another conversation with it, which
mm-hmm.
would maintain the connection with it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's helpful.
Good. Thank you. David.
Yes, I also want to express gratitude for this retreat. Mm-hmm. I think it's been absolutely fantastic, and I must admit that I hadn't seen it so clearly until that last processing, but there was a story of like, you know, it's just going to be Friday night, Saturday, Sunday morning, kind of a weekend off. It had kind of gone into that, probably not going to see a whole lot. I've seen my entire life flash in front of me. I mean, it's been immensely helpful. Mm-hmm. So just really appreciated that. And then the thing that I was looking at was this recognition of that fear is an ego identity.
Uh-huh.
That's something that I've never put, that had never kind of fit together like that before. And it goes into a bigger category of what's being owned. Like, what am I taking ownership of that isn't me?
Uh-huh.
So for example, like the identity of fear.
Or the process of fear.
The process of fear. That's a nice way to say it. The process of fear. The process of resistance.
Uh-huh.
So there is this experience that I had yesterday when we went out to look at nature. And all of a sudden, you know, it's from an ongoing practice that I have of releasing the body. You know, all the area, like the first three chakras and the shoulders and any tension. There's kind of a moment-by-moment practice I have. And so it feels like the real kind of change of behavior way that I can access living in the body or embodying the joy moment by moment. And it's so there I was going through, and there was that moment of recognition that there was everything was being held and gripped tightly.
Mm-hmm.
And so what occurred in that moment, in the moment of noticing, there was also a simultaneous movement into letting go.
Uh-huh.
And with that letting go, there wanted to be, it was actually really a cool experience because it was like, oh, there's the resistance. And then I stopped for a second and it was like, for example, there wanted to be an ownership, or there was a seeing that resistance, it's like, if I label it resistance, the I who is labeling it resistance, then there's some kind of a little sleight of hand trick going on where then there's been an ownership of like, oh, I'm the one resisting, so what I have to do is now let go of the resistance in order to have the surrender that just took place.
Uh-huh.
Or plug in the process of fear.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the one who's living in fear, so now I need to... And it was, I don't know if it's...
I think what you're describing is being in awareness,
uh-huh.
And then the attention, so here's my experience, that mm-hmm. the conditioned process is often gross, in mm-hmm. the sense of, there's such a gross level of identification mm-hmm. that it's about I, it's me, it's who, whoever.
Mm-hmm.
But if we think about it as a process of identification, or a process of dissatisfaction, or a process of separation, then the first engagement of it is the movement away from awareness,
mm-hmm.
which then births the identity.
Yes.
Right? So
yes.
I project what you're looking at that close level of attention in the field of awareness
mm-hmm.
is how the process of separation from life
yes.
is starting to happen.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? So there's a moment of, oh, there's that awareness of contraction,
uh-huh.
which is a sensation record.
Yes.
And then the process of interpretation starts to happen, which results in someone who is yes. having to be afraid, resistant, alter the circumstances.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. It's like, you know, it's said a million times in practice, but in that moment of seeing, there was an awareness of how it becomes personal.
Uh-huh.
How it moves into a somebody, an I,
uh-huh.
and then the entire thing gets going
mm-hmm.
from there.
Mm-hmm.
And so in just like that flash,
mm-hmm.
there was just that place of like, oh, that's just energy being suppressed.
Mm-hmm.
It was so liberating to see, oh, that's the energy, that's what it's like when the energy is suppressed.
In other words, there can be an awareness of the shifting patterns of energy without it being personalized into someone who's having an experience.
or an agent who needs to do something about that experience. Uh-huh. Both of those became really, really abundantly clear.
Uh-huh. It's in the new book, right? So life arises, and then 1, 2, 3 nanoseconds later, there's a process that hooks it.
Uh-huh.
And you can, uh-huh. and we can pay attention to what that process looks like, from the subtlest movement away from life to the grossest manifestation of an identity.
Yeah. It was amazing, and I recognized that so much of it felt like what the willingness to kind of go up against the story, if you will, mm-hmm. of that process of fear that like can't let go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, seeing it on such a, you know, on every level that the body is held so tightly.
Mm-hmm.
The willingness to moment by moment just mm-hmm. practice being aware that that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then allowing the attention to be directed to the surrender.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In some ways, it felt like, so there wasn't an I who was, there wasn't an agent who was paying attention even, if you will.
No. Mm-hmm.
It was just the willingness to continue to be there, and then all of a sudden the insight was there, though, mm-hmm. that release was there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that was really fun. And then, I don't know if we have time, but there's one more little thing.
We're just about running up against the clock, so maybe a minute.
A minute, okay. So this morning, other people have mentioned kind of walking across property, or I have my moment of walking across property, recognizing again that things have become tight, there's a story going on, and the practice of stopping and you know, kind of surrendering, and then recognizing and having a memory from a long walk that I did, which was categorically the 10 most blissful days of my life. And all of a sudden, looking up and everything in that moment of surrender again, releasing of the whole body, there was, you know, the bliss, it was there again. And then there was another awareness of, okay, it's almost like life was saying, if you put your head back down and walk like you always do, you're right back in the story.
Uh-huh.
So in the transition, which is that place, I've heard Sherry say, transition is where it can... In the transition, I left my head up. And I carried on walking, and the memory came back of those 10 days of walking. When I walked for those 10 days, the head was always up, the body was released, and there was just a being in the movement of life, and there was no space for the story.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And of course it flickered, it wanted to flicker, but it was just the awareness that like, oh, that's available.
Mm-hmm.
So, wait a minute.
Thank you.
Thank you.